this is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop it. Right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Kieran Light. Marvin Gaye's asking a really good question there. What is going on? Because, you know, for the past week or so, I've been hyping up the Seattle Seahawks, and they've made me look like a fool. Hi there, I'm Kieran Light. This is Still Talking. I'm the guy who doesn't shut up about sports, and I just want to get right into things. So, yeah, like I said, I've been talking a lot about the Seahawks, and I've been praising them a lot. You know, a couple weeks ago I did a little segment. I literally called it In Praise of Good Coaching, where I said, you know, all these good things about Mike Macdonald and the new identity he was bringing to the team and how he was a fresh, new, accountable kind of identity to this team. And they did start out well. They were 3-0, and I felt a little bit vindicated because the Seahawks, you know, they were playing really well. Geno looked awesome. His connection with DK was incredible. Even after they lost that Lions game, which, by the way, that was another way they fooled me. I picked them to win that game, and they lose. But even after that Lions game, I still had faith. And then, over the last week, they have completely unraveled. So, like I said, the Seahawks, they started out 3-0 this season. Granted, they were against some less than amazing opponents, but 3-0 is 3-0. And then in 11 days, just 11 days, they lose three straight games. Now, I understand that most teams don't play three games in 11 days. Usually it's around 21 days. And so that's a like major turnaround. But it's in such a short span, the Seahawks went from looking like a really, really good playoff contending team, maybe even Super Bowl contending. I wouldn't go that far, though. And now they look like complete crap. So last night they were on Thursday Night Football. They were playing against, they're hosting the San Francisco 49ers, the incredibly banged up San Francisco 49ers, who don't look like themselves, who haven't been playing at the elite level that we've gotten used to with them. So this was a very winnable game. And it needed to be a very, this was a get back game for the Seahawks. They absolutely needed to win this because on Sunday they lost to the New York Giants. I'm going to get into that in a minute. But I'm just going to talk about the more relevant game here. So they had their division rival come to town on primetime in a much, much, much needed game, and they play like crap. They were totally flat the whole game. And that defense that I was really excited about and I was hopeful and optimistic about going forward, again, makes me look like a fool because they were absolutely folded by a Niners offense without Christian McCaffrey. And just to sort of illustrate how important Christian McCaffrey is to the 49ers, I know that they were really good before they got him, but they ascended to a completely different level when they did. What Christian McCaffrey does, and this is a really like underrated aspect of his game and his impact as a receiving back, because he is the best receiving running back in the league, what he does is he totally disrupts and destroys any defense's ability to play too high shell. And you can look at it. The 49ers are, I think, going into last night's game, I think they were 26th in red zone efficiency. And that's because he's no longer there. So this is a 49ers team that was coming into Seattle without a guy that absolutely makes things impossible for defenses. Remember, too high shell was that thing that, I can't remember who was saying that they need to ban it. But two high shell is the go-to formation for defenses with their safeties, and it is incredibly effective. And the one guy in the league who can absolutely destroy that was not there. So here you have the 49ers, you have them on the ropes going into the game because they haven't looked like themselves. They've lost bad games to the Vikings and other teams, and they just lost to the Cardinals, I believe. you need to win this game. And then just nothing. This is a defense that was supposed to be really good, and they let Brock Purdy dice him up. And Geno Smith was supposed to keep playing at an elite level. Him and DK were going to go off, and Jackson Smith and Jigba was going to really like step up this game, maybe even Tyler Lockett. I was hyping up their run game because Kenneth Walker looked fantastic in every time we'd seen him. And yeah, I know Kenneth Walker fantasy owners are happy because he got 20 points, but most of that was receiving because he had 8 receptions. Thank God I played PPR. But he wasn't there. The run game was not there last night. They had 52 yards rushing, only 2.6 yards a carry. Geno Smith was awful. Awful. Totally, totally bad. Like, and I don't even want to say that it's like, oh, he just had one bad game. This was different. I mean, 30 for 52, 312 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. His QBR was a 52.6, and his passer rating was a 65.5. That is horrendous. The only good stat he has in that stat line is the 312 yards, but that's only because he had 52 passing attempts. So here we are in Seattle. This guy, this quarterback, that's the new thing. You know, Geno, oh, they wrote me off. I didn't write back. I don't know, man. Maybe they should have. Or maybe you should have written back. Because right now, you're not playing well. And I'm really angry because I like the Seahawks just as a team. I want to move to Seattle eventually in my life. And I've always, you know, had a bit of a soft spot for them. And I was really hyping them up because I liked what I had seen. And you're making me look like a damn fool. And DK Metcalf can't ever get a touchdown and have it not get called back for some reason. I don't understand how an O-line that was playing well. I mean, I understand that Nick Bosa and the Niners' D-line is really good, but like, I don't understand how an O-line that has to block for two really good running backs like Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet suddenly can't get anything going. And Geno Smith forgets how to, you know, pass a ball beyond 5 yards. His footwork, I don't know. I'm not going to comment on his footwork. I'm not a coach. But he looked different. This is a different Geno than I saw against the Lions. In a game that they lost against the Lions, Geno also looked good. Geno was, in fact, fantastic. He made a couple mistakes, yeah, but it was excusable because he was putting the team on his back. The only reason why Seattle had a chance in that game against Detroit was because of Geno. And again, that defense was awful then. And I thought, hey, they're going to turn it around. Mike McDonald, defensive head coach. And they have all these guys like Reek Woolen and Devon Witherspoon. I thought, oh, these guys are going to be great. And Leonard Williams, the guy they traded for last year. Oh, they're going to be great. And no, they can't for some reason. Even against bad offenses like the New York Giants, who they lost to on Sunday. The New York Football Giants, one of the worst teams in the NFL. Suddenly, just without Malik Nabers and without their starting running back, Devin Singletary, just become amazing. Daniel Jones, one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, definitely the worst contract in the NFL, suddenly plays up to his contract out of nowhere. That is extremely telling for your defense if Daniel Jones is able to live up to his contract in a game without his number one wide receiver who's been bailing out this team and without their starting running back. I mean, that is awful. Daniel Jones in that game, 23 for 34, 257 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Geno Smith against the Giants, 28 for 40, 284, 1 touchdown, no picks. His rating, his QBR, 54.7. Daniel Jones, 69. Passer rating for Geno, 98.3. That's pretty good. But Daniel Jones, 109.6. There's no world where Geno Smith should be getting outplayed by Daniel Jones like that at home. Mind you, the Giants are an East Coast team. They have to travel all the way to the Pacific Northwest. That is not an easy trip. And he's without his best receiver, his best weapon, and his starting running back, the guy he can rely on. And this is a defense that was at full strength. That is really telling for the Seahawks team. I've lost all faith in them. And I know it's quick to say because, you know, just a week ago, I was still really in love with the Seahawks. I liked what I saw. I ranked them as one of my 5 best teams in the NFL. So, Kieran, how can you suddenly just turn your back on the Seahawks? Well, how can the Seahawks suddenly lose three straight games and go to 500? You've lost all control in that division. And mind you, that division, by the way, yeah, Seahawks. I was talking about how the Niners were reeling coming into this game, and this is your chance to take advantage. The whole division is reeling. This is the Seahawks' chance to take advantage. The Rams are injured. Just totally. They're a hospital. That all of L.A. is the hospital for them. Puka's out. Cooper Kupp's out. And so is, like, their entire offensive identity. The Niners, I mentioned already, they're already missing a lot of guys. McCaffrey's been out all year. He's probably not going to come back until, like, November. And then the Cardinals. The Cardinals are a cool upstart team. I remember, when I talked about the Cardinals, I thought they'd be a solid team. I really like Marvin Harrison, obviously. I'm a big Kyler Murray fan. I was excited to see what they would do, and I thought that they'd be better than people thought, but I still didn't think they'd be super good. And now the Cardinals have a chance of taking this division. The Seahawks had it in their grasp. They were 3-0. The rest of their divisional opponents were either injured or just not good enough yet, and they're not taking advantage. That says a lot about coaching. So in praise of good coaching, in criticism of bad coaching, Mike McDonald had all the praise of everybody. He was a media darling, really, because you watch any game in the first 3 weeks, and really even past that, the announcers are always talking about how like exciting it is that Mike McDonald's here. And you read an article, and they're talking about Mike McDonald's new regimens to get these guys, to get them ready. And now they're not looking ready. They're not taking advantage. They're not capitalizing. They're not themselves. They come out flat. Part of me wishes Shane Waldron was still calling plays. Okay, no, that's a bit far. Shane Waldron sucks. So, yeah, Seattle, like, I need them to work on it. I still want the Hawks to be good. I think the league is better when the Hawks are good. But this is really, really telling, because you should not fall to 500 this quickly and against these teams and in that fashion. Losing to the Giants on a blocked field goal returned for a touchdown, game-tying field goal that was blocked. So it's not even just the offense, not even just the defense, it's the special teams too. That tells me that there is something fundamentally wrong with Seattle. And I apologize for not seeing that and for hyping them up despite that. In other words, with coaching, Robert Saleh, the Jets head coach of three-ish years, has been canned. Following their loss in London this past Sunday to the Vikings, Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, who, mind you, was the former U.S. ambassador to the United Kingdom, has fired their head coach, Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh, who they got when he was the defensive coordinator in San Francisco back in, I believe it was, 2019. They lost to the Vikings 17-23. Saleh, in his three-ish years as the head coach, he was 20-36. And you know what? For all my criticisms of the Jets, of which there are many, this is another one. Because what the heck are you doing, New York? Robert Saleh is not the greatest coach there is, but he's like the eighth problem on that team. There is so much wrong. I was talking about what's fundamentally wrong with the Seahawks and how I didn't catch it. Well, it is clear as day what is fundamentally wrong in New York with the Jets. They are bending over backwards for Aaron Rodgers with anything he wants. That's the issue. You just want to make sure Aaron's happy. You don't care if you win Super Bowls. You don't care if you win games. You don't want to have success. You just want to make sure your precious Aaron Rodgers is happy and that he gets no blame whatsoever, because then you can tell your friends, well, hey, guys, no, it's okay. We still suck because we just got Aaron Rodgers. See, look, I don't care that he's 41 and has no Achilles and he spends his weekends in the dark. Guys, we got Aaron Rodgers and he's happy. Look, this is the difference between good franchises and bad ones. Good franchises, even when they make bold, sometimes unconventional moves that are tough to wrap your head around, at the very least, the kinds of decisions they make, you can sit back and say, you know what, I can understand why they think that works and why they made that decision going forward. I can see a world where that is a good, successful move. Bad teams make decisions where you're like, what are you doing? What, this seems like, where you have questions about it. And my questions with this move, with firing Robert Saleh this past Tuesday, is it seems too, like too much of a knee-jerk reaction. Like, this is too quick. Like, this is just not quite the right thing I would try to do in this situation. And it's now I'm getting the vibes that there's an owner who is too hands-on, which we know from a litany of different examples is never a good thing, namely David Tepper, currently with the Carolina Panthers. Right? There are so many, and this is a bad Jets franchise. I don't care if they won a Super Bowl 60 years ago. They've been bad. Everybody knows this. This is why I don't believe in the Jets. This is why I'm not crazy, because I wasn't taking them to go to the Super Bowl like I saw so many other people doing. It's insane to me that the New York Jets can just get away with this kind of thing. Robert Saleh, again, wasn't my favorite head coach. I wasn't all in on him. I wasn't like, oh yeah, he's a good coach for sure. But he wasn't bad. I mean, look what you gave him. You gave him Zach Wilson. He had Zach Wilson to work with. He's not a good quarterback. He's shown flashes, but he wasn't a good quarterback. Then when you finally give him a good, talented quarterback, he's the oldest player in the league. He's coming off a major injury. And you make sure that he has every single thing he wants. There's no discipline with this team. I bet you there's just insane double standards. Aaron Rodgers comes to the Jets. I want a massive contract. Well, Aaron, you're 40 years old. I don't care. I want it. They give it to him. I want Randall Cobb. They get Randall Cobb. I want Alan Lazard. They get Alan Lazard. Oh, I want Nathaniel Hackett. Well, Nathaniel Hackett's a terrible coach. We just saw this in Denver. He was actually really, really bad, and his offense sucked. Well, I don't care. He was my offensive coordinator in Green Bay, and I want him. So they get him. And the offense, well, who would have thought? Nathaniel Hackett, the guy who, funny enough, couldn't hack it, is now their offensive coordinator, and their offense sucks. What? This is an offense with Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall and Braylon Allen and a solid but not great O-line. And for what it's worth, Alan Lazard is also good. And their offense stinks. Well, who would have thought that maybe the guy who sucked as a head coach in Denver and hasn't had a good offense since, you know, he was in Green Bay with prime Devontae Adams and prime Aaron Rodgers. Well, who would have thought that offense sucks? It's just another example of bending over backwards for this guy. So they fire Robert Saleh, who, again, not my favorite, but he was like the eighth problem on this team. Because at the very least, his defense is tried. I know that's kind of crazy to say about an NFL-level team, but you could see his defenses were not the core fundamental issue in New York while he was there. And last year, statistically speaking, that was one of the best defenses in the NFL. That was Robert Saleh's specialty, and that was definitely not the issue last year. The issue was you went for a quarterback who doesn't like traditional medicine and got hurt. And then he was stuck with Zach Wilson again. And then this year, the defense is also pretty good. So Robert Saleh, who's the defensive guy, who's the motivating guy, he got his players motivated. And he had a good defense. And you fire him because Aaron Rodgers throws two interceptions against the Vikings? Like, I don't know what you're thinking. It makes zero sense to me. Sorry, three interceptions against the Vikings. I was wrong. That's not Robert Saleh's fault. At the very least, if it's not Rodgers' fault, it's the play caller's fault. And who would that be? Oh, yeah, Nathaniel Hackett. There's no reason why Robert Saleh should have been fired, especially this early. I don't understand it. I never will understand it. And this is why the Jets will never do anything good. Devontae Adams is ready to be served up to them on a silver platter. The Raiders are just waiting for the Jets to call them. And what are they doing? Nothing. They're sitting with their hands, they're just sitting on their hands. They're just doing nothing. They're just waiting for the Super Bowl to just come knocking on their door. This is why the Jets will never be anything good. This is why I'll never buy into them. This is why I don't care who they have on their team, whether it's Tom Brady and Lawrence Taylor. I will never buy into the New York Jets. I need to see some astronomical, meteoric turnaround from this team for me to actually have any kind of belief in them. This is a stupid move, and now you're going to have this coaching controversy, this power vacuum in a team where you already have a quarterback who's trying to have as much power as possible. You don't want any mental and sort of like, you don't want any distractions beyond football. You just want the focus to be football. That's how good teams win. The Chiefs win because they're focused on football all the time. Yeah, they have really good players, but these guys care about the game. That's why they've won 3 out of 4 of the last Super Bowls. And that's why the Jets will never do anything close to that. because they're not focused on football. They're focused on optics and making things look good. It is not Robert Saleh's fault that Aaron Rodgers threw three interceptions against the Vikings and that Nathaniel Hackett couldn't cook up a game plan that he, against a Vikings defense he knew would be really good. We know the Vikings defense is good. We know Brian Flores is an incredible defensive coordinator. And you can't think of anything? It was not the defense's problem on Sunday because Sam Darnold, who was looking really good, didn't look particularly like himself. He had his first kind of like regular game. Like the kind of game we expect from a Sam Darnold. So the defense was not the issue. It was the offense. It was Aaron Rodgers making bad throws, or it was Nathaniel Hackett being an awful play caller. And now that the defensive coordinator, I think his name is Dave Olbrich, is the new interim head coach, he smartly has removed play calling duties from Nathaniel Hackett and giving it to the passing game coordinator, Todd Downing, who, if you know from Tennessee, also not that great. The Jets are fundamentally flawed in literally every way. From ownership, again, I really don't think that there's an argument to say that it's not an owner getting too hands-on. Because as an owners of these teams, they want their teams to look good so that they can sort of, you know, show off a bit, because that's what they like to do. And when you're the former U.S. ambassador to the U.K. and your team loses like that in London, I guarantee you Woody Johnson immediately said, get him out of there. He embarrassed me. Not because it was a football decision. That was strictly an optics decision. Moving on. I got a couple minutes left. And the NBA season's coming up. So I thought I would do another version of the lights list. The top five teams, according to me, Kieran Light, going into this upcoming NBA season in a couple of weeks here. So let's just get it started. Number one, and it's unfortunate to say this. You know how I feel about this team. I hate to have to say it, but the best team in the NBA is the Boston Celtics. I don't like this team, but I can't deny their greatness. Look, they're the defending champions. To not have them number one in my power rankings simply based off that would be lunacy. Jaylen Brown, by all accounts, seems to be coming back with a vengeance. He's angry about not being on the U.S. Olympic team. He's angry about how he's talked about in the media. And look, he's coming off a Finals MVP, and he played, like, again, he was fantastic in that Finals series. He stepped up big time. That was my big sort of takeaway from that series was it all comes down to who steps up. No one on the Mavericks did it, but everyone on the Celtics did it, and Jaylen Brown especially. That's why he got Finals MVP, and now he's coming back for more. I think he's going to be fantastic. Honestly, you're probably going to hear a lot. There's going to be a big narrative around the Celtics, and that's going to be, well, is Jaylen Brown better than Jason Tatum? Is the Celtics Jaylen Brown's team? You're going to hear that a lot. And not necessarily for bad reason, because I think Jaylen Brown will be really good this year. And plus, Tatum is also really good. Don't let that future narrative distract from the fact that Jason Tatum's an awesome player, and he's half the reason why the Celtics were able to win the championship. And Porzingis, hopefully, is fully healthy this year. He was great when he was playing for them, especially in the playoffs and in the finals. So he's going to be back. I was talking about badly, poorly run organizations. Well, the Celtics are the complete opposite. Joe Mazzulla is a fantastic head coach, and Brad Stevens, who was the coach before him, was a fantastic head coach and now works up in management. And it's just good franchises know how to replace good coaches, and they did that, and now they have pretty much two good coaches in their management. The Celtics are a very, very well-run team, well-run franchise, organization, all that. No reason to have them anywhere lower than one on my power rankings. Number two, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yes, the young, upstart, overachieving OKC Thunder that went all the way to the one seed last year in the Western Conference, the bloodbath Western Conference. Look, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had an MVP-caliber season last year. He didn't win it, but he finished high, and he was fantastic. I had him on my basketball fantasy team. Thank God he was fantastic for me. And now, going into this season, I think he's primed to win the MVP. 40% of NBA executives, they were anonymously polled, and 40% of executives think that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will win the MVP this year. Then they add every player I wanted them to add. Sam Presti must be an avid listener of Still Talking, because they addressed every issue with the exact player I wanted. They get Caruso for added perimeter defense and bench defense and scoring. And then you get Isaiah Hartenstein as a backup center, a great rebounder, the guy who was fantastic for the Knicks in place of Mitchell Robinson last year. Number three, here's a shocking pick, the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks are going to be really, really good this year, guys. Look, the Damian Lillard trade made us all think, oh my God, they're going to do it. They're going to win the championship their first year with Dame and Giannis. And look, Dame and Giannis were really good. But I think people got caught up in the hype last year, and they thought that, well, they have to get it done year one. The Bucks were under a lot of pressure. And look, say what you want about the Bucks. I'm not too giddy about their coaching staff. But them not getting that championship year one with Dame and Giannis was okay. It's okay. This was a major shift for both of those two star players. Neither of them had played with a co-star like that, with that kind of play style. Neither of them played in that kind of system. It was okay for them not to win it year one. And I think now going into year two, they're going to be much improved. They added more vets. I really enjoy it. Number four, the Denver Nuggets. Simply, they're just too good. Like, they're the most consistent team in the league. Jokic is Jokic. He's going to get his triple-double and be incredibly effective. He's going to be an advanced stats darling. Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. are just going to be the perfect co-stars for him, and nothing's going to change. The Denver Nuggets are still really good. And at number five, it's the New York Knicks. To me, they are just absolutely fantastic of a team. That's a weird phrasing, but I'm going to go with it. Yeah, they're absolutely fantastic of a team. They were really good last year. They were this upstart team, kind of like the Thunder a little bit. And then you add Karl Anthony Towns, and you totally fix your roster construction. You have not just a center now, an elite center. And you have Jalen Brunson, and you have OG Anunoby, and Mikal Bridges, and all these other guys. I think the Knicks are going to be really, really competitive next year going into this season. I think they might honestly win the East over Milwaukee and Boston. I don't mean like they'll go to the finals, but they might get the one seed. Go Gina by SZA to end things up. Have a good weekend, everybody. The mics are coming up, but you know me, I'm still talking.
Dropping out and I've been hanging out with my high friends and we threw stone to pay attention. I mean, really, it's same me, it's old me, you know, same. I've been on the low key.